Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Sarah Dykstra. On this edition of the podcast, we'll hear from Stephen Lattimore as he reports on the protest at the Gary International Airport. Regionally speaking, host Chris Nolte talks with Northwest Indiana activist Ruth Needleman for the occasional conversation about the local issues of the day. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Northwest Indiana voter rights and participation. Why should we care and engage in local politics? Is the focus of the next public forum facilitated by Lakeshore Public Radio at Purdue University Northwest's Hammond campus this Monday, June 5th. The free one-hour forum, also offered in partnership with the League of Women Voters of the Calumet area, begins at 5 p.m. in Alumni Hall on the third floor of the Student Union and Library, located on 2233 173rd Street. Chairs of Lake County's Republican Party, Dan Durnell, Democratic Party, James Weezer, and Libertarian Party, Michael Sandridge, head the forum's list of panel participants. They will be joined by other party members. Lakeshore Public Radio newscaster-broadcaster Chris Nolte will serve as the moderator. While the Trump presidency has made for a lively national political climate, this forum seeks to use that climate as a springboard for engaging and acquainting Northwest Indiana voters about issues that can impact their lives in Northwest Indiana. Lakeshore Public Media Vice President of Radio Operations Tom Maloney said, quote, "This forum is an opportunity to continue public dialogue and civil discourse about the impact of politics after an election," end quote. Community members are invited to attend and listen to local political leaders discuss the importance of voter participation in the election process. The forum will be recorded and broadcasted on Northwest Indiana Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, at noon, Tuesday, June 6th, on Regionally Speaking. You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. The merger of Methodist Hospitals and Franciscan Health Alliance Group raises questions about healthcare services, jobs, and more. A town hall meeting was held at Ivy Tech in Gary to answer some of those questions. Lakeshore Public Radio Stephen Lattimore was there and has the story.
The merger of the Methodist Hospitals in Gary and Maryville and the Franciscan Health Group will mean a new 150-bed hospital at 8094 near the Indiana University Northwest campus. Methodist Hospital CEO Raymond Grady made his pitch before a packed house at Ivy Tech in Gary. Under the plan, no jobs would be lost, no salaries would be cut, and there would be no layoffs. Provisions have also been made to offer procedures for reproductive services at other institutions, and Methodist would be a stronger hospital. The hospital in Gary would also become an outpatient facility. Methodist Hospital CEO Raymond Grady says the consent decree that was granted by the feds to remedy racial discrimination by hospital leaders in the 70s needs to be eliminated or altered so he can make better decisions about hospital operations. State Rep. Charlie Brown was part of the group that helped to get the consent decree approved by the courts.
There's just too much discussion centered around sunsetting the consent decree, which I am at this point not in favor of at all. When they initially built Methodist South Lake, they began to move services out and was diminishing all kinds of services for Gary. And that's when a group of citizens went to the Office of Civil Rights and say, you know, we firmly believe that they are going to close Methodist or continue to diminish services here. The Office of Civil Rights agreed with that. It was taken to court, and the court said, yes, you have a solid case, and therefore we will implement this consent decree to inform Methodist that whatever you do for Methodist South Lake, you have to do for Methodist North Lake.
Gary Mayor Karen Freeman Wilson would have to sign off on any merger plans.
And there was white flight that had led to the creation of Maryville on Gary's border as a result of an amendment to a state law, because you were not supposed to have a town created within 2 miles. There was a buffer zone. There was a 2-mile buffer zone between every town. So if you go around this county right now, you will not see a town located within 2 miles except in Lake County.
Then there is the poor reputation, according to some, that Franciscan has in the community.
I've only got 2.5 more years before retirement, but let's get real. if they come in, they're going to say, Dee, you've been with Methodist this many years. We can get, okay, let's do a layoff. Let's get rid of out. And then we get, yeah. And then we are going to hire the new ones because they're cheaper.
And they're younger.
You know, Franciscan has a history. Their history is very long, and they have never changed their history. They lay off every single fall they lay off. Every single fall they lay off. And the thing is that what usually happens is the Times will let you know. And then all of a sudden you have brand new people to come to other hospitals where they haven't been laid off.
The meeting was organized by SEIU. They represent 600 workers at both hospitals.
I'm still guardedly optimistic about the potential merger because we need economic development within the city of Gary and continued economic development in Northwest Indiana. Our concerns are always the protection of our rank-and-file members.
Stephen Mays is president of the NAACP in Gary. He likes the $300 million investment, but he also has some questions.
Well, I think moving forward is some things that we need to analyze that we see in other health campuses. We see the outpatient, we see the health centers of prevention. I think that's critical that we educate our community. I like the health education piece. I want to know what the links are for future doctors. I want to know if it's going to be a teaching hospital. Didn't get a chance to visit on those kinds of questions.
This is one of several conversations that Methodist will have with the community about the merger. Methodist hospital officials hope to have the merger finalized by the end of the year. In Gary, Stephen Lattimore, Lakeshore Public Radio.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. State officials plan to investigate the drinking water of more than 700 public schools this summer. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Peter Ballinon Rosen reports, officials will travel the state testing for lead contamination.
The Indiana Finance Authority's Environmental Programs Division plans to collect samples from drinking fountains, sinks, and other fixtures on school campuses. Environmental Programs Chief Jim McGough says inspectors will examine lead levels to determine if action is needed.
Lead contamination is most dangerous in children, and so thought that offering public schools the opportunity to assure that their drinking fountains were safe would be the appropriate place to start.
Officials plan to test and replace contaminated fixtures over the next 12 months. In recent years, reports of lead contamination have dotted the state, including at schools in Elkhart, Kokomo, and East Chicago. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Peter Ballinon Rosen.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. The group Northwest Indiana Resist says they are not going to stand by as residents from the Chicagoland area are deported out of the Gary International Airport. They held a second protest as deportees were being loaded onto a plane at the airport. The group plans to fight the process with protests and nonviolent direct action could be next. Lakeshore Public Radio Stephen Lattimore has the story, but please be aware of audio issues.
Deportaciones, no más. Deportaciones. No más.
At the Gary International Airport, the battle lines have been drawn as Resist Northwest Indiana is doing what they can to stop illegal immigrants from being deported from the Gary International Airport. Organizers say the process is terrifying for deportees. Lee Whitman is with Northwest Indiana Resist.
This is probably one of the worst days of their lives, one of the worst days of the lives of their families, and we want them to know that there are people out here fighting for them to come back home and that no one else will be following them. That is the plan, and that's what we're going to continue to fight for.
For the families of illegal immigrants, the nation's immigration policy rips families apart. Cecilia Garcia's husband was deported.
The reason I support this is because 5 years ago, my husband was deported. And it didn't matter that I was an American citizen, that I was going to be left behind as a mom and dad for my five American citizen children. What mattered back then was a quota, because as we all know, there's a 30,000 bed quota per day that needs to be filled. The only thing my daughter wanted this Christmas, and the thing I could not give her, was her dad. We have exiled families right now who are immigrants outside of this country because their spouses are not allowed back in, you know, here in the United States.
Reverend Charles Trudelmeyer is with the Northwest Indiana Federation, an organization of religious groups throughout Northwest Indiana.
I think there is a climate of hostility that's being generated against people who are different from us, and it needs to be stopped everywhere. The second is I see this whole deportation business as a very poor way of avoiding what we've needed to do for years, and that is to bring comprehensive immigration reform that is fair and effective. The sense that I have is just fear. I know that there has been, after the recent election, there was an increase in suicides, I've been told on good authority.
Reverend Cheryl Rivera is also with the Indiana Federation.
If you are a person of faith or a person of value or a person who believes in human life and human rights, that's why we're here. So as a person of faith and as a Christian, I'm here because this is what Christ would do.
Northwest Indiana Resist says 19,501 people have been deported from the Gary International Airport. As the buses drive by the demonstrators, their chants grow louder.
Show me what democracy looks like.
They want to make sure the deportees can hear their support. They say they're committed to stopping deportations from Gary International Airport, and Ruth Needleman, one of the organizers, says they are ready to take nonviolent direct action to stop deportations here.
We're going to have to put pressure on people. We're going to have to block a bus or two down the road. We're going to have to really make it clear that this airport and this city will not deport.
In Gary, Stephen Lattimore, Lakeshore Public Radio.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. The overdose reversal drug naloxone is in high demand across Indiana, but the state is now seeing more mixes of opioids causing overdoses. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Charlotte Tuggle reports, that's leading first responders to go through their supplies more quickly.
Overdoses caused by multiple types of opioids require larger or repeated doses of naloxone. Justin Phillips founded the group Overdose Lifeline and says first responders may have to administer as many as a dozen doses of naloxone to combat one overdose caused by a mix of drugs. But she says that's better than not using the antidote at all.
If we did not have naloxone, the bodies would be piled up the way we saw in history with plagues.
Tom Duddy is a spokesman for Adapt Pharma, the maker of Narcan, a naloxone nasal spray. He says the efficacy of the treatment is not compromised by a mix of opioids.
Naloxone and Narcan are opioid antagonists, so they do work on synthetic opioids as well as organic opioids.
Duddy says stronger synthetic opioid-triggered cases may require more doses of Narcan or an IV drip of naloxone once a person has reached the hospital. Phillips says in Indianapolis alone, naloxone stops an otherwise fatal overdose for 1,500 people in the span of an average month. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Charlotte Tuggle in West Lafayette.
Chris Nolte talks with Northwest Indiana activist Ruth Needleman for the occasional conversation about the local issues of the day, including a public forum on the Ivy Tech Gary campus about the proposed letter of intent to bring Methodist hospitals in Gary and Merrillville into the Franciscan Alliance family. A group of organizations, including the SEIU, that represents Methodist Hospital employees, is sponsoring the discussion. Ruth also talks about the latest protest outside the Gary Chicago International Airport about the ICE-sponsored deportee flights out of the area. And she has the latest in the lead contamination issues in the region water supplies.
Well, I think there's some very important questions that people have to think about with this. First of all, Methodist has a long-standing agreement to make sure that services at Methodist Gary are full services. It's the only hospital in Gary, and that Merrillville doesn't get all the investment and all the money. And it's not clear, and this is something that will come up, is Franciscan, who has eaten up almost everything in Northwest Indiana, almost every doctor I have is now part of the Franciscan network. But will they honor that commitment to the Gary Methodist Hospital as a full service, equal in all of its services to what it provides in Merrillville. Another question has to do with the employees there. The employees of Methodist Hospital have been union for a very long time, and good workers are hard to get if you don't have decent pay and decent benefits. And will they honor the current contract with SEIU that represents the workers at Methodist? Will they try to lower the cost of the Gary Methodist by not bargaining in good faith with the union, not recognizing the union, or trying to short staff, which is already a big problem in hospitals across the country?
I think that the SEIU is one of those that have helped organize this evening's public forum.
That's right. I would definitely recommend, I will be there with my camera, and I would recommend that people go, because if you live in Gary, this is your hospital, and anything else is pretty far away. And so it's really critical that we maintain a first-rate hospital in Gary, Indiana. And it's going to be at Ivy Tech in the multipurpose room on 35th Avenue, just down the street from IUN. And so I would get there a little early so you can get a good seat and maybe even talk to some of the folks ahead of time to see what the other issues are.
As important a public forum as this is, I'm sure there will be quite a few people who will be there to ask questions, certainly among the employees and staff and family members of those who work currently for Methodist Hospitals, as well as what kind of impact that the Franciscan Alliance folks will probably have to answer questions as well, too.
That's right. And the Northwest Federation of Interfaith Organizations has been involved for some time, because they know that unequal services is what Gary tends to get all the time. And so they're very concerned, and I know they're mobilizing also for this event.
One of the other meetings recently, as of last Friday, as a matter of fact, was another of the series of ongoing protests and complaints about how the immigration and the customs enforcement people are taking their hand on folks who are being living in America illegally and in turn deporting them. And, of course, the flights for those deportees out of the Gary-Chicago International Airport. You were at the latest event that happened last week. And tell us about what happened and how the process is coming along.
Well, this is a very difficult issue. I don't think the audience is aware that Gary gets no benefit from this. The city of Gary and the Gary Airport do not get any of the funding that goes along with the deportations. McHenry County, Illinois, brings the detainees who come from the entire Chicago area and southern Wisconsin to the airport for deportation. And the airplane, which is a charter company out of Brownsville, Texas, takes the people down to Brownsville and leaves them at the border, pushing them to the other side. And we have been able to find out that none of these people are guilty of what you would call crimes, serious criminal activities. Not having documentation is a civil offense, although the current administration in Washington is trying to criminalize almost everything. And so one thing that has been high up on their priority is deporting people who have committed no crime. 40% of all the increase deportations that are going on are people who have not committed crimes other than wanting to be with their family. And so it's hard to figure out what to do. The Jet Center has a contract with the airline, the air carrier, and the air carrier has a contract with immigration. The money does not come to the city, but the black mark does come to the city, because having people deported, and this last time we were able to see people getting off these buses, and these are ghost buses because they're all white with white across the windows. And they parked in front of the airplane, and you could see them going up the steps with shackles. They had to have help to get up the steps. These are not criminals. These are family members desperate to remain. Some of the people, even some of the people from Indiana, have been here 10, 20, 30 years. There's a man from Colombia who is being deported, who worked as a waiter in a restaurant in Elkhart. And the people of Elkhart, a very conservative town, were up in arms that their waiter was being taken away. As soon as you put a human face, people begin to understand what's happening. And one of the other important things that's going on is the deportation of veterans. U.S. veterans who have fought for this country are being picked up, maybe for a minor drug offense, maybe because they didn't carry their papers with them, and they're being deported very quickly. And all of this is really a terrible thing to be going on in a city like Gary that was built by immigrants from Europe and refugees from the South. That's who built the steel mills, that's who built the town, built the cities, and lived here. And yet, that's who is being picked up and deported in our city. And I think you know, we talked about it last time, the city of Gary passed a welcoming ordinance saying, we don't want to see our people picked up for no reason and deported when they've committed no crime. Mm-hmm. And a civil offense is not the same thing as a criminal act.
And those would be cases that should be coming up in federal court.
That's
in
right.
Hammond, no doubt, or maybe,
well,
maybe Chicago.
Not, there's a huge lack of due process, and there's special judges just for immigration. That's all they handle. And they're very unpredictable. One judge in Chicago just let somebody remain because he humanely figured it out that this person had three children and that the three children who are U.S. citizens would suffer more than the benefit to this country of deporting their father. But that's not usually the outcome. And so we do want to stop these deportations. But it's going to be difficult, and there will be a program on The Loop TV on June 8th. They're doing a documentary on the deportations at the Gary Airport. I encourage people to take a look at it and to give us a hand. We will be returning on a regular basis to at least let them know we're watching. They have three entrances to the airport. No matter where we go, they enter somewhere else. So who knows? We might be turning up at all three entrances the next time.
One of the other topics I want to bring up here that has come up, of course, before, and to get an update on if there's something to talk about, or the problems with the quality of drinking water here in Northwest Indiana, in particular in the communities of East Chicago and some other communities as well, too, where we've had heavy industrial activity over the decades, and they are turned not as quite as bad off as East Chicago is, but you still have places in Gary and no doubt in Hammond and other communities as well, too.
Well, Gary, East Chicago. Michigan City has some serious problems right now with their water. And there's been a bunch of people posting recently in the Miller area saying that the water's coming out yellow. And I think what we have to understand is all of these old industrial cities have lead pipes. And lead pipes will always release lead into the water. And it's quite expensive to replace it. My neighbor replaced her lead pipes before she could sell her house, and it was $2,000-$3,000. And most people in Gary, in Michigan City, who live where the water is worse, do not have money to put in new pipes. I've gotten two letters now signed by the mayor of Gary from a private company that wants to replace my, wants me to buy insurance on those pipes. And I can't figure out why the mayor would sign the letter, but she's into what she calls cost sharing. In other words, trying to get money out of people who have some and forgetting about the people who have none. And I think you know this, but in Flint, they're not only still drinking bottled water, but now, because they will not pay for the polluted water, they are having their water turned off completely. And so poor communities, poor industrial communities throughout the Rust Belt are suffering from contamination that is life-threatening, certainly for young children, and really will be the demise of our cities if it's not taken more seriously and if money is not invested.
We know that the state is taking some steps to help, at least for some part, the issue of making sure that drinking water in schools in areas like East Chicago are taken care of. They've made plans to be able to replace piping as well as water fountains and the like in schools that are affected. So there'll be some help coming to some people.
Of course, Harry Walsh was already shut down. Brand new school building had to be shut down, and people were sent over to another school. And when they forced everybody out of West Calumet, they sent some people in the middle of the school year to South Chicago to projects that are dangerous. And so, yes, the state is giving some help. IDEM has said, yes, we have to do better. But the fact of the matter is, how many years has it been in Flint? 4 years now, and they still don't have drinking water. And I think the people, especially in zones 2 and 3, who own their homes, they don't can't afford to, they can't sell their homes because they've lost all their value due to the lack of water and the contamination in the soil. And so we really need a new deal. We need a special plan to save the Midwest from what was vast industrial pollution. And the corporations who did it have not been providing a single penny.
Northwest Indiana activist Ruth Needleman with us talking about some of the issues. And, of course, we'll have you back again soon and continue the conversation. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
It was my pleasure, and I look forward to talking again.
For Lakeshore Update, I'm Chris Nolte.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program's link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition from NPR News with local host Sharon Jackson on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Sarah Dykstra.